Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today's show continues our once-a-month consumer focus on the legal system. This special edition is called Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. You may recall our first show in this series was in March. The topic was how Alaska chooses its judges. If you missed it, that edition is available as a podcast on our website at alaskapublic.org. For today's show, we go to the other side of the bench. This time, we're talking about how to find a good lawyer. Back with me this week is my legal expert and co-host, Senior Judge Elaine Andrews. Welcome, Judge Andrews.
Thank you. Pleased to be here again.
We deeply appreciate your experience both on the Alaska District Court and Superior Courts and on the Judicial Conduct Commission. So thank you so much. It's great to have you with us. This is a big topic. We want somebody with lots of experience. And you've got a couple of guests today, so why don't you introduce your guests?
Well, I do. People with lots of experience that I think will help us wend our way through this topic today. We have Stacey Marr. She's the Director of Self-Help Services for the Alaska Court System. She's a prior legal services attorney. She is an innovator regarding new programs to improve access to the courts for folks who need legal assistance and need to wend their way through the courts. And she also has a depth of experience regarding self-representation and interpreter issues. We also have Monica Elkington here, a private attorney. She is the co-chair of the Alaska Bar Association's Unbundled Legal Services section. We're going to learn what unbundled services means.
Sounds like your internet service.
She's a solo practitioner. That means she is in practice by herself, and her focus is family law and criminal law. She's a former public defender.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, welcome to you all. It's wonderful to have you. Just before we get started, I just want to let folks know we welcome calls from our listeners. We welcome your questions. Maybe some of you have had a little experience in this area. If you hired a lawyer and learned something, maybe you want to share your insight with us. Maybe you made a mistake or had a bad experience. We'd like to hear about that, too. We can take your calls in Anchorage. It's at 550-8433 or statewide 1-888-353-5752, and we can also take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. One last reminder, we have many links. We're going to talk about a lot of services that you can search and find on the internet, and we've got those links on alaskapublic.org. So if you just remember alaskapublic.org, go to Hometown Alaska. You'll see this wonderful list of links that our guests provided today that would be a good resource for our listeners. So, Elaine, let's get started.
Well, the question here is lawyers. Can't live with them, can't live without them. I think probably most people run into the question of a lawyer just by watching TV. And they hear on the TV, someone gets arrested. They're told you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you. You have the right to counsel. And if you can't afford counsel, counsel will be appointed for you. So that's a mantra that a lot of people are familiar with. But that's such a small slice of what lawyers do. But let's start there. And let me ask Monica, if you're charged with a crime, can you get a lawyer? Do you have to pay? What happens if you can't pay?
Sure. So you can always get a private attorney. You can hire an attorney yourself. You probably meet with them or talk to them on the phone, usually sign a written agreement and make a payment. If you can't afford an attorney, then the court makes a determination based on your income, so you have to tell the truth about what your actual income is, and then you may qualify for an appointed attorney, and that's called a public defender. Sometimes the public defenders work for the state. Sometimes they work for a private firm that has a contract with the state or a locality, so they might not have the exact title of public defender, but they might be the same in the same role as an appointed attorney for you. It's not 100% free. There's a court rule that says you may have to pay if you're convicted of your crime. You may have to pay a small fee eventually, but it doesn't take any money up front.
Well, if I was charged with a traffic ticket, can I get an appointed lawyer for my traffic ticket?
It doesn't apply for traffic tickets. It only applies for crimes that you're looking at some jail time.
All right.
So misdemeanors can, some of the misdemeanors, The maximum is 6 months in jail. Sometimes it's a year in jail. Usually, if it's your first one, you don't get something like that. But if you're looking at jail time, then you can qualify for an appointed attorney if you can't afford one.
And in order to determine if you could afford one, what's your experience at what it would cost someone to hire a lawyer for maybe a DWI? Let's start your first DWI. You've been arrested. You want to get a hold of a lawyer. What do lawyers cost?
I think it depends on the complications of the case. It depends on the area of the state. Here in Alaska, I would probably expect for your first DWI to be within $1,000 to $3,000. And some attorneys charge a flat rate, meaning that you pay that amount of money and then you don't ever have to pay any more. That's what it's going to cost no matter what happens with your case. It could get dismissed tomorrow. It could go to trial 6 months from now. Either way, you pay one bill.
Does that tend to be higher?
It depends on the attorney. Some attorneys charge hourly, so you might have to pay up front a certain amount, and then if your case is more complicated, you may have to pay more later because the attorney is going to spend more hours on it.
I have a question. You know, suppose it's a complicated case and you're just at the beginning and you have some assets. Maybe you could finance $3,000 of legal fees, but you don't want to switch horses in the middle, right? What if you run out of resources? So is it an important first decision?
It's definitely an important first decision, but you can always switch attorneys unless you have to get the judge's permission to switch attorneys. But a lot of times they'll do that unless it's right before trial. And the judges are going to look at whether it's good for you to switch attorneys. So if you have an attorney that you don't like and you're having problems with your attorney and you want to hire somebody new, then that's okay. You can talk to other attorneys and figure out if you want to hire somebody new. You're not stuck with the same person if it's not working out.
I was just worried about public defenders that it starts with a private attorney and then suddenly they have to pick up a case midstream. Does that happen?
Sometimes that happens. It also happens the other way.
Uh-huh.
I think it happens both ways.
Okay.
And it can be for a variety of reasons. It can be for a good or bad reason.
Mm-hmm.
It can be because the client's not working well with the attorney. It can be because the attorney is not motivated to take the case. It could be because the attorney is retiring or who knows what. So it mm-hmm. can be for a lot of different reasons that I think people go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fairly common. I mean, sure, it would be ideal to have the same attorney for the entire case, but it doesn't always work that way. And sometimes it can definitely be to your advantage to switch attorneys.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So, Stacy, in the Self-Representation Center,
what is the Self-Representation Center?
Maybe you can tell us what that is, and does it have anything to do with getting an attorney in a criminal case?
Sure. Well, the court offers help for people who don't represent themselves in several ways and areas, and in particular in family cases, so divorce and child custody matters. We have a self-help center that is available statewide. It's a phone-based center where people can call in and talk one-on-one to one of our really fabulous facilitators who will answer their questions and walk them through the process of their cases, as well as offer them options for forms. What they don't do is give legal advice because we work for the court. So they're not replacing an attorney's advice, but they're helping them navigate the system and understand what their options may be. But we don't provide self-help services for criminal cases. And that is because largely there is a right to an attorney if they are low income. And so most people receive representation in those cases. So they have the assistance of counsel to help them navigate. So we generally don't provide self-help assistance in criminal cases.
I bet you find people who are seeking these resources are also seeking legal advice from the person they're talking. I mean, you know, they're frightened. This is new territory. Is there a way to help people know when they're stepping over the line? Is it when you talk about your case that probably the person helping you cannot comment on your case? Is it that clear?
Yeah, that's a really good point because people do want to talk about their cases. And in fact, they do. And it's perfectly fine for them to talk about the specifics of their case with my staff so that they're able to give them good information back. But when they need advice in terms of strategy for their case or should I take a certain approach or a path, that and what kind of outcome am I likely to expect? That's where my staff have to stop and suggest that they talk to an attorney. And that's where what Judge Andrews mentioned earlier, unbundled legal services, really comes in and is incredibly helpful and complements the kind of work that we do out of my office. Because, and I'll let Monica really fill in the blanks because she's the chair of the section that deals with unbundled legal services at the Bar Association, but unbundled attorneys offer discrete services. So you don't have to hire the attorney for the whole case, but there's lots of aspects that you can hire them to complete just a specific task. So my staff can talk to somebody and say, well, you really need to get some advice on that particular area, and I suggest that you look at unbundled legal services if that's what you can afford, or you think that's a good idea and you want to do part by yourself and you want assistance with part. So it works really well, but we're really clear with folks that we don't advise them, and that when they get to that place, we do send them over to lawyers. That's really
it's
important.
It's an interesting option that there's unbundled services, so you sort of get what you need as opposed to the whole package. Is that the way to think about it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way to think about it. This is Monica again, and the there's a list online on the Alaska Bar website, and it's also linked on the Justice Alaska website for this show, that is a PDF downloadable list of 32 attorneys here in Alaska all over the state that do this sort of law practice, unbundled, or sometimes we call it limited scope practice. But it's just taking a piece of your case. So it's appearing for one hearing, or it's drafting one document, or you might negotiate that they might draft a couple documents, but it's usually for a small fee and much, much, much more affordable than you would hire a lawyer for a full representation case. So sometimes it's meeting with a lawyer for an hour or so to discuss your options and for the lawyer to give you advice about what you need to do, which is what they can't do at the self-help center. So it's a good way to be able to afford a little bit of representation, especially if that's all you need. Like if all you need is somebody to draft a document for you, then you don't need to pay a full retainer.
So if, say I've got a case and I just want to talk about it, and I go for an unbundled service, maybe an hour of consultation mm-hmm. with a lawyer, give me a rough idea of what that might cost me. Is that going to be like $1,000?
Well, it depends on the experience and of the attorney and the skills of the attorney. I charge $350 for 1 hour for consultation with advice. So I provide free consultation sometimes, but my free consultations don't come with advice. But if you want an advice, then it's $350 for 1 hour. And I think other lawyers around the state charge varying amounts from $200 to $400.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering whether legal services are more expensive in rural areas than they are in big cities, or really have no idea. Don't know.
I don't honestly know the answer to that question.
Mm-hmm. I charge the same whether the case is here in Anchorage or case whether it's farther
so
away.
So we know what your billing rate is. I was thinking of, you know, it could. I know that there are lawyers in Bethel, there are lawyers in Nome, there's lawyers in Barrow, but there's probably not lawyers in Sleep Mute or mm-hmm. some of, you know, Night Mute, some of the other communities. And, you know, do you take calls from?
I do. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the Anchorage attorneys have experience in a lot of rural courts. And most of the time we appear telephonic and then fly there if necessary. Mm-hmm. And there are attorneys, you know, in Nome and Barrow and Bethel, that sort of thing. Maybe one of them wants to call in and let us know whether they're more or less expensive than an Anchorage attorney.
That'd be interesting to know. I mean, cost of living in those communities can be a bit higher, so maybe that does affect their fees. We don't know. Yeah. All right. So where else
should
we go?
Well, so if, and this is Judge Andrews, if you don't want to represent yourself and you have a civil case, meaning a case that's not a criminal case, it's something other than a criminal case, and you want legal help, where can people go? If they there's legal services, maybe Stacey, you can talk about how you work with legal services and what they might be able to do for people.
Sure. There is a real range of options. I think we're very lucky here in Alaska because we have a spectrum from representing yourself and where you can get a lot of good information from the court to represent yourself in a variety of case types to full representation with a lot of options in between, including unbundled like we just talked about, But we also have several providers that provide free services if you qualify. And usually you need to be low income, but Alaska Legal Services has several offices around the state and provides fantastic representation. And I believe they also do unbundled as well and help people assess what is needed in their case to best serve them. And then we have other providers that do free services as well. The Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, the Alaska Immigration Justice Project, the Disability Law Center. So depending on what's going on and what the legal needs are, there are plenty of options out there. But unfortunately, the need is greater than the resources, so it's hard to expect that you'll necessarily get the free services. But it's, we always suggest to folks that if it's a possibility, you should at least inquire, and they may be able to find somebody that's willing to help you take their case through a pro bono program, because most of them have pro bono programs, which is free volunteer attorney services that are willing to either do full or partial representation in cases. So there's options there. And then depending on whether you're a member of a union, you may be able to get free legal services through your union. So it's always really important to check through your union or possibly through your employer to see if there's options there. And if you're a member of the military, there are legal assistance offices that can provide a range of legal services as well for military members as well as retired military members. So there are several options here in Alaska.
I was just wondering whether people who are members of Alaska Native communities, whether Alaska Native corporations ever have legal services for Alaska Natives. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Well, all of the Native corporations do have legal departments. And I don't believe that most are providing direct services to their shareholders, although I think there's some movements, and I know Siri has done some work in the last year where they have gone out to villages and provided some services, and I think there's some interest in continuing to expand that. And then once a year at AFN, there's been a big volunteer attorney opportunity for lawyers to provide free legal services to people who sign up for services through AFN, and that's called the Elizabeth Paradovich Legal Service Clinic, and that has been really successful. And then through the Bar Association as well, on Martin Luther King Day for the last several years in at least several communities, so Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks this past year, all offered free unbundled legal services by volunteer attorneys in several case types. So we've had great volunteerism to help support these different programs.
Well, that's really amazing. I didn't know about any of that, so I think that's really great. Thank you. Good to know.
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of pro bono, which means for free, mm-hmm. For the good, of services that lawyers do render. It's actually part of their ethical duties as part of their profession to provide free legal service as part of their professional responsibility. And really, Alaska lawyers are amazing in that way, a tremendous, and we're not talking about just an hour here or an hour there at a clinic. Some of the highest paid lawyers in town take on cases that are enormously complicated, run through trial, appeal, retrial, hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal services in a single case for someone who could not possibly have afforded even $1,000 for them.
Yeah.
So the lawyers really do an amazing amount of work.
Do lawyers take cases, pro bono cases, because they have an area of expertise and they're just, or it's an area they're interested in, or there's interesting legal questions in it? What are some of the reasons the lawyers would do that?
I think probably all of those things. The larger law firms support their lawyers in doing it, and that's a tremendous help as well. And some people are just, they're committed in a certain area. They may have been, the child of an immigrant, and they've got an immigrant who comes to them, and they just decide this is something that they want to do, and they're just going to do it to the very end. And in the early days, before there was a public defender agency and lawyers had to take indigent cases, there were lots of lawyers that came close to having to close their offices because they had you know, they took on a client that
was
a big burden, and their paying clients had to wait. And
So there's some risk involved. Before there was Alaska Legal Services, or
before there was an institution of a public defender, it was simply the job of lawyers to volunteer their services.
Yeah. And you mentioned an ethical obligation. Is that in writing anywhere, or is it in the Bar Association?
In the Code of Professional Responsibility.
So is it sort of a percentage? Or?
No, I don't think it's a defined percentage that you have to do, but it's an expectation that that having acquired a license that gives you this opportunity, you owe something back to the public.
That's really interesting, yeah. By the way, you mentioned pro bono, and it reminded me about the directory for Alaska attorneys that we basically, our audience doesn't know this, but we took a call this morning from Todd Communications, which publishes the directory for of Alaska attorneys. And based on Justice Alaska, Flip Todd made a donation to Justice Alaska of 50 volumes of the current issue of the Directory for Alaska Attorneys. And so it's, you know, I called Elaine and I said, well, what do you think? Elaine said, it's loaded with information. And just before the show, we were talking about that. It's everything from where people went to law school, you know, where what bars they belong to, legal bars they belong to, all kinds of things, even the public record. If someone has been sanctioned, a lawyer has been sanctioned, you would find it there. All the numbers for the court system, all of these things. I think you called it, Elaine, the Bible for the legal community in a way.
It is. It has, you know, it lists the public defender agencies throughout the state, the district attorneys, the attorney general. So if you're looking to find out who's a public defender in Bethel, you're going to find it in this book. How, you know, what's the number for the magistrate in Barrow? It's all there. So it's really a justice directory.
Right.
And it has all the lawyers.
And I talked briefly with Flip, and I said, so do people pay to get in there? And he said, no, it's the list from the Alaska Bar Association. So the Alaska Bar Association has designated them as a lawyer in good standing, and that's how they get in. And but I do want to let people know there are 50 copies and they are free, and it's normally not a free publication. It's a pricey publication. To obtain one, it's first come, first serve to go to Todd Communications. And we have the address on the website. It's 611 East 12th. Near sort of 11th and Fairbanks. And so between the office hours of 8 and 5, Monday through Friday, until April 29th, or they're all gone, you can stop by that office and pick up a copy. So in terms of consumer information for the legal system, I thought that was just a very generous thing, and wanted to say thank you to Flip Todd for doing that, and to Todd Communications. So, and all the lawyers in the room here endorse that as a really useful thing for people. So thank you so much. So, all right, where else shall we go? I have one. I can throw one out. What if you want to fire your lawyer? Is that difficult to do?
So it's important to know that just calling up your lawyer and saying you're fired, if there's a court case going on, that doesn't do much.
He or she is not free to release you?
That's right. And in order for a lawyer to withdraw in a court case, withdraw as your attorney, they have to ask the judge's permission. And you can file, or you can tell the judge, I don't want this attorney anymore. The judge may say, no, that attorney's staying in. The judge may say, we're at a point in the case where it would be not in your interest to not have this attorney anymore. Usually that doesn't happen. That does happen sometimes. But oftentimes, if an attorney and a client have communicated and have decided they don't want to work together anymore, then the lawyer will file something with the court, a document called a motion to withdraw, saying, we've decided I'm not going to be this person's lawyer anymore. And the judge will generally grant it, but they do have to ask permission. Mm-hmm. So that procedure has to go through before the lawyer is relieved. I mean, and the judge is generally looking out for the client's interests.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge is making sure that the client might have another lawyer on board, or if the client's going to represent themselves, make sure they're prepared to do that.
Right. You know, just thinking about your years on the bench, is this something that you were called upon to, is it common?
It certainly happens, and it's a difficult situation when it occurs, because people oftentimes are they don't have a good basis.
Well, it's an emotional time.
It's a very emotional time, and all of those motions to withdraw have to be carefully considered. And sometimes the lawyer wants to withdraw, and the client doesn't want to let the lawyer go, and sometimes it's vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
These are difficult case-by-case kinds of things. They're not just pro forma motions. Because there's also another party in the case. And so if this representation disrupts the case going forward, there's a whole other group of people that have an interest in the case going forward. And so it's not just a complicated problem.
Right. I was wondering, I know from the first show we talked a lot about the role the judge plays in trying to explain what the heck's going on here. And I wonder, would you say you got a client that just wants to fire their lawyer and maybe represent themselves, would you sit down with that person and actually have a one-on-one with them before you make your decision?
Yes, you would do that on the record. You wouldn't call them back off of the record. It would be a recorded situation. Because if you're going to, especially in a criminal case, if you're going to allow someone to represent themselves, you actually have to make an inquiry to determine that they're competent to do it. And people do have the right to represent themselves so long as you make a finding that they understand at some very basic level the rules that they have to abide by and that they will abide by the rules. And then, you know, the judges are always in a difficult position when people are representing themselves, because judges are not advocates. They do not represent unrepresented people. They are referees over an adversarial situation where a person who's not represented is oftentimes disadvantaged. So it's a difficult situation. And I think that kind of brings us back to, should people have lawyers? I mean, a person trying to decide, should I hire a lawyer? Is this the kind of case where I could get in over my head?
We're going to take a tiny little break right now. We'll come right back and we'll start there. That's an excellent place to start. If you've just joined us, this is Justice Alaska today on Hometown Alaska. And we have Stacey Mars, Director of the Self-Help Services for the Alaska Court System, Monica Elkinton, from a private attorney and co-chair of the Alaska Bar Association's Unbundled Legal Services. So they're going to continue on with us in the second half hour. And of course, Elaine will be here with us, our expert co-host. So thank you for listening. We'll be right back. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and I'm joined today with Elaine Andrews. This is Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. We do it once a month. We had a show last March on the judicial system and how we choose our judges. And if you missed it, but you want to go back and find it, it's on our website at alaskapublic.org. Today, our topic is lawyers. How do you choose one? What are your options? So just before the break, Elaine was just about to ask our attorneys here, how do you know, how do you find, where do you begin finding a lawyer?
So the initial question is whatever I'm facing, I got a document in the mail, I don't really know what this is. Do I need to hire a lawyer, and how do I go about finding a lawyer? So, Stacey, if someone gets a document that looks like it's a legal document or a process server God forbid, comes
something
to your
scary.
House. Yeah, something scary, you know, gets delivered to you and you...
What's your first step?
What happens next?
Well, your first step is to read the document. Thank you. You might laugh, but there's a lot of people who just put it away, don't read it.
It's too scary.
Recycle it, throw it in the trash. Yes, it's overwhelming. So the worst thing to do is to ignore it because things can get worse, more expensive. They can move ahead without you if you're not paying attention. So it's really important to read that document. And you need to kind of think about some things to determine if it's something you can handle on your own or whether you should hire an attorney, whether you want to hire an attorney for full representation or partial. And I think you have to know yourself. You have to know your ability to act businesslike in a situation that might be really difficult and emotional. And it depends on, obviously, the case type and how complicated it is, how organized you are. Are you able to keep track of documents and dates? And so all of these considerations really go into determining whether you think you can handle something yourself or whether you need help. And we really always think it's a great idea to check in with an attorney no matter what and see if, at least right when you get the paperwork, if they can help you assess whether this is something that you can do on your own or in partnership with a lawyer in an unbundled situation or whether you need full representation. So I think reaching out to an attorney pretty early on is helpful because they can help save you some problems later. And sometimes things can be resolved relatively easily and quickly, and sometimes just simply talking to the other person in the case, provided it's not a criminal case and it's a civil matter between two individuals, sometimes simply communicating can help avoid court or make the case go away pretty quickly in an uncontested fashion. So an attorney can help you cut through and make a decision whether that's something that's a good idea in your case. And then there's also out-of-court processes that can be really valuable, like mediation, and that might be an option. And lawyers can also help assess whether that's a good option in your case. So there's a lot of considerations, but prompt action is a really important thing to do right away.
You know, we got a couple of emails, and one of them sort of comes right off of Stacy's point a little bit about this idea of can any lawyer do a collaborative divorce, or does it require special training or certification? So I was thinking about, does this mean we're in a court case, or what are the other options? Is there mediation possible, or, is there language I should use if I'd rather this be settled out of court versus we go to court? This is information you want to transmit to your lawyer. So, at the very beginning, when you're unsure, how do you communicate with your lawyer about?
It's definitely helpful, this is Monica, in your first meeting with a lawyer, first phone call, to say what the what your goals are or what you think your goals might be. If you're at that point, if you get some papers and they're super scary and you have no idea what to do, of course, you say to your lawyer, I have no idea what to do. But if you've thought it through a little bit and you've said, well, this person is maybe suing me for a certain amount of money and I might be a little bit at fault and I might be willing to pay a little bit, that's something to discuss with your lawyer as soon as that you have that thought. Mm-hmm. I think maybe what the email might be getting at is there's a specific group of professionals here in Alaska called collaborative professionals, collaborative lawyers that handle divorces and family law cases.
Okay.
And their goal is to find resolutions and help people find resolutions. They also deal with a team of financial professionals and mental health professionals to help mediate an agreement that works for all parties that does not involve litigation. So there's lawyers that have been specially trained in that particular term, collaborative, but most lawyers who do divorces and do family law cases can help you find a mediated resolution or a settlement, even if it's not through the collaborative process, but there is a special collaborative process that people have found very helpful.
So does it require special training or certification? Would you know?
For that particular collaborative process, yes.
Okay.
It requires specific training and on how to use their process to reach an agreement and work with the other professionals on the team.
And so if you were looking for a collaborative lawyer in a divorce case, how would you find a lawyer who does that or who's certified?
Well, I believe on the website today there's a link to the Alaska Association of Collaborative Professionals, and hopefully that's up.
Yes.
And you can find a collaboratively trained attorney through that website.
Yes, we do. We have Alaska Association of Collaborative Law Professionals. That link is on alaskapublic.org. So basically, people self-identify. They train specifically for it. But it sounds to me, Monica, you're saying that in a family law situation, someone might also just say to a lawyer, I'm interested in
finding a settlement.
Trying to mediate this, find a settlement. I'm not necessarily really headed right to the courtroom.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, I think most lawyers, no matter what kind of case type you're in, can help you find a settlement. I think it's very rare that there's a lawyer that says trial is the only way 100% of the time. I think that's not necessarily true. I think for most cases, I mean, most cases settle, whether it's a civil case, whether it's a family law case, whether it's a criminal case. So I think it would be rare for a lawyer to say, we're going to fight this out 100% all the way till the end, because it might be in the client's interest to find a settlement. And I think most lawyers know very well how to negotiate a good settlement in your case and help you find a good settlement and help you figure out which of the options are the best for you, whether it might be to settle your case early, it might be to continue your case for a while and then settle it later, or it might be to take it all the way to trial.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I should throw out our phone numbers for our listeners in case they've got questions or ideas or thoughts about their own experience with trying to hire a lawyer or go through that process. If you're in Anchorage, give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 1-888-353-5752. And we can also take your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Let's see. It's just such a big topic.
So this is Elaine Andrews. And if someone wants to hire a lawyer, I would suggest to people that they do what they do every time they want to hire a professional for any reason, a doctor or a dentist. You check in with friends and family, and generally speaking, names start to show up on the list over and over again, and that's probably the person you want to make an appointment with and go talk to them. But if you maybe are new to the state or you don't want to discuss hiring a lawyer with someone, the Bar Association has a lawyer referral process. Maybe, Stacy, you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. The Alaska Bar Association has a lawyer referral service, and we have the information as well on the website. But the lawyer referral service is a service that Alaska lawyers have signed up to be included on the list. And if you called the phone numbers to get a referral, you're going to get a list of at least three lawyers who have agreed to do a consultation for the first half hour that would cost $125 or less. And these are lawyers who say that they practice in that particular area, but they haven't been otherwise vetted, but they're on a list. So they are members in good standing and active practice with the Bar Association. Other options are, and this as well as on the website, is on the court system's website, we have a link for finding a lawyer. And on that link, there's several options for information, including the lawyer's referral service, what may be available for free or low-cost legal services, a link to the list for unbundled legal services. And then there's all the self-help resources that the court has for people who are representing themselves in family law cases, guardianship and conservatorship, probating an estate, filing a civil appeal to the Alaska Supreme Court. And then we have information for landlord-tenant cases like evictions and small claims actions as well. So there's quite a bit of information.
Yes, I'm looking at it. There's tons. It's great. Lots of good advice. Start with reading. As you said, read the paperwork you get in the mail. Read the websites. I was wondering whether, your experience, all three of you, whether, you know, the majority of cases coming down the pipeline are divorce or are, employment issues that people are unhappy with or are landlord-tenant. Is there a way to characterize the most common typical legal experiences people sort of the first time you walk through, this is, you know, likely what you're facing. I what's the most common is really what I'm wondering.
I would say that probably divorce cases, family court cases are by and large the most prolific kind of case in the court system, and probably the place where most people interact with the justice system. People do get charged with a crime, but it's a relatively small percentage of people. But oftentimes people either themselves are getting divorced, or they were, you know, a child in a divorce case, or their family members getting
complex.
A divorce. And
yeah.
So people tend to have had quite a bit of contact with the court in connection with that, whether it's child custody, property division, child support. I would say that probably the family law area is
huge.
Is huge.
A lot of folks interact with the court system in traffic as well.
Tickets? Are we talking tickets?
Yeah. When you challenge your ticket, that begins a court process. So traffic court is something that a lot of people who have no other contact with the system come to traffic court. And usually there's no attorneys there. Usually it's a magistrate.
Self-representation.
Yep. Self-representation and a police officer and a magistrate deciding whether you violated this traffic rule.
Is there any guidance on how to prepare for a traffic? Have you ever seen anything anywhere? If you're gonna, it's going to be a self-representation. So,
right. So this is Stacey. We actually are developing a little bit of public information for how to deal with that when you're facing a traffic ticket and you're coming to court, because right now there hasn't been a lot of information that the court provides for people in this circumstance. But it's pretty simple. You should show up if you want to contest your case and organize your information and tell the magistrate judge your version of what you think happened, and then they're going to listen to any evidence from the other side, who mm-hmm. is usually the police officer, and they may have video, they might have just testimony, and then they're going to weigh out who they believe and determine.
Both sides. Well,
and
go
the
ahead.
Other thing I think I'd like to make sure people understand is that the court is an open place. So if you are going to get involved in a proceeding, and most people are naturally intimidated by the process, there are very, very, very few closed courtrooms. There is nothing to prevent you from going down, taking a look at the court calendar, and walking in and sitting in on any kind of proceeding that you want to watch, just to get familiar with how does it go, what does it look like, is this the courtroom that I'm going to be coming to next week?
That's actually just, really
it's,
helpful.
It's almost no courtrooms are locked. They really do welcome the public. That is a hallmark of the American justice system, is open public trial. And you should use that fact to your advantage to come down and sit and
watch. See with your own eyes.
Yes.
Listen with your own ears. Yeah. And sort of see. And you,
it
I
helps
guess
to reduce the stress when you actually have to be there, I think.
That's excellent advice. I'm going to welcome a caller on Hometown Alaska, Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'd like to welcome Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Welcome. You have a question?
Oh, absolutely. I was wondering if in the proceedings, if they see more people, more Alaska Natives in different kinds of cases, and as a follow-on, since divorce is so common, do typically attorneys know that Native corporation shares are often the most valuable asset that people have and as an asset for consideration in divorce? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. So the first part was what sorts of cases are Alaska Native people experiencing the most? Is there any way to characterize that?
This is Stacy. The court does not keep demographic information on the people that are involved in the cases. And I work all around the state, and we talk to people, thousands of people a year from my office, and I would say that Alaska is incredibly diverse and become more and more diverse over the last 10 years. We see all kinds of cases involving all kinds of people all the time, so we don't have data on the particular kinds of people that are in certain cases, but I'm in the court all the time, and I see all kinds of people. Your question about whether attorneys that handle family law matters are aware of the value of native dividends, and I say yes, that those are regularly discussed when finalizing a divorce case and the parties are asked whether they have native dividends, particularly if their children do, and how they're going to be managed, who's going to be the custodian of them, and if there are proceeds, how will they be spent or will they be saved? So family law attorneys should be aware of those issues. I know that they regularly come up.
And if you have an attorney that is not addressing that issue, then absolutely bring it up to them. Either, you know, give them a call, or when you're in a meeting with them, then say, hey, have you considered what's going to happen with my native corporation shares? Because I don't I'm not sure that's been considered as part of this property division. So any concern you have about your attorney, you should absolutely ask them, because that should be an open communication between the two of you. And if that's something that your attorney hasn't considered, then perhaps they should. But I think I agree with Stacey that most family law attorneys should absolutely be considering that.
I think one of the things that the Self-Help Center does very well without talking to any person is provide forms. I often tell people, if you're in the process of perhaps going to court for a divorce, custody modification, something like that, go down and pick up the form that pertains to your kind of case and read through it, because the form asks you to fill in all the information that the court is going to need. So whether you are going to take that then to an attorney to assist you, or you're going to proceed on your own, or whether you decide to resolve the matter between the parents somehow and come up with a written document, this really tells the people who don't know much about the area the topics that they need to have answers to in order to resolve the problem. So simply picking up the forms and walking through them and educating yourself is a tremendous asset.
Yeah, I was wondering, Judge Andrews, in your experience on people representing themselves, have you seen it done well? And have you seen it done not so well?
Well,
I imagine you've seen it all.
I actually have. Yes, I have. We could spend several programs with lots of really interesting stories on that topic alone. But be that as it may, I think people don't understand how time limited the court process is. So I think the people who represent themselves the best are people who have all their paperwork in order. They've written out the narrative of what they want to say. I don't think people understand how stressful walking into a courtroom can be. And so even though they thought they were going to be able to get their story out, they get tongue-tied, they get nervous, they forget. So preparation really results in a much higher level of self-representation that gets the message across to the judge. What is your story? What are the important parts, and is more likely to lead to an answer that you're looking for? It's, but I, lawyers like doctors, it's, if you have the ability to get a lawyer, it would be better than representing yourself. It's just.
Would you say rule of thumb?
rule of thumb, or at least consult with a lawyer. And mm-hmm. if you decide you want to represent yourself, you have a constitutional right to do so. But lawyers can help you out, even if you decide to represent yourself.
Okay. I just thought if people, A, are intimidated, but B, they might think, I'm a do-it-myself kind of person. I think I can do this. And you may not know what you're getting into. So at least talk to a lawyer before you decide you're going to represent yourself.
And that's exactly what we can do with the unbundled list. So the list is on the website for the show, but it's a PDF list of attorneys all over the state that can help you with bits and pieces, or help you prepare for a hearing, or help you strategize about your case. And that's what these attorneys are really there for.
Yeah. I have a question about fees, because for me, that's where the anxiety comes in. It's like it's important. But so I'm going to read this to you and see if you can decipher it for me. It says, This is from a publication that I found out. It's just tips if you're going to hire a lawyer. It says, make sure you understand what you're paying for. No two contingency fee arrangements are alike. Find out if your lawyer will take their fee, quote, off the top or only after all the expenses are counted up. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. I think it's good advice if it's something you understand.
Yeah.
So I talked before about some attorneys have a flat fee that you pay up front, and it costs one fee regardless of what happens with the case. Some attorneys have an hourly fee that regardless of what happens, you're paying for the amount of time your attorneys are working. And then there's a third type of fee called a contingency fee, which you might have heard often happens in a personal injury type case where a person is injured and it may cost a bit of money to bring the litigation, but the person doesn't have any money. And so the attorney is taking a percentage of the settlement or the eventual award. And the percentage that they take depends on the attorney. Sometimes it's a third, sometimes it's 25%, sometimes it's more than that, depending on the skills of the attorney. And I think what that paragraph that you read is trying to say is, are the costs of the litigation going to ultimately come out of the attorney's part, or is it ultimately going to come out of the client's part? And I think for many contingency fees here in Alaska, it comes out of the client's part. So if your case goes to trial and your attorney has to hire an expert witness like a doctor to say that your injury is caused by the accident or some other expert witness, then the cost for that expert witness might come out of your client award, mm-hmm. The client part. It might not come out of the attorney's part. So that's something to consider, because those costs of litigation might not be anything you have to pay up front, but ultimately might eat out of what you end up getting. And there are some people that have had these lawsuits with contingency fees, and at the end of the case, it's gone on for so long that the attorney gets their piece, and then the client who's supposed to get, you know, 2/3 of the award might not have anything left because there's been so many fees.
Wow.
So that's something to pay attention to and to talk to your attorney about.
But that dovetails into a lawyer's, the bar rule that if you are going to represent someone in a matter that the attorney's fees would be more than $1,000, you have to have a written agreement mm-hmm. with your client.
Okay.
So these things should not be left to the end. And lawyers, when you meet with a lawyer, you would want to see what their written contract is for representation.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if there's going to be a dispute, the Bar Association has a fee arbitration panel. So if something goes awry with regard to your contract for representation, you think the lawyer charged you too much, you ended up in a situation where you think the lawyer walked off with all the money and you didn't get anything, something untoward happened, you can file a complaint with the Bar Association and it will go to a fee arbitration panel.
That's good to know.
Yeah,
that's
good to know. And there is a free mediation service through that too. So you can file your complaint with the Bar Association, and then they will bring in a volunteer mediator, if you consent to it, to help you and the attorney reach an agreement. So sometimes that'll help them too. And sometimes it's the same kind of situation where there might be a disagreement, but the parties haven't actually spoken to one another about this disagreement. This happens in a lot of court matters, as we've heard before. But even in if you have an issue with the fees you have to pay your attorney, the first thing to do is to talk to your attorney about it and make sure that they understand your concerns before you go to the bar, because that's always it gives them an opportunity to take care of it and alleviate your concerns. And many attorneys will do that. And sometimes they don't even have any idea that you're having a problem. But then there is the fee arbitration process, where a panel of attorneys picked by the bar will help decide if the fees have been fair. But then there's also the volunteer mediation before they get to that panel to help resolve the fee dispute.
You know, I was wondering whether if you've got this big legal bill, can you pay by the month or do you have to pay up front? I mean, can you make arrangements with your lawyer?
Yeah, sometimes
so
you can.
You can negotiate the way you're going to have to pay for this.
It really depends on the situation and the attorney, but it's absolutely worth asking.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, that's interesting. Well, we have about almost just a half a minute left. I was just going to sort of go give you each the chance to sort of leave one thought with our listeners. So, Stacy, from the court system, the self-help version of the court system, what one thing would you say? Read your documents.
Yes, read your documents. But I think it's really important, no matter whether you represent yourself or you hire a lawyer, that you educate yourself so you, if you choose to represent yourself, you're ready. And if you hire a lawyer, you're a more informed consumer of what you're buying.
Well, we ran out of time. But thank you. Thank you so much. I'd just like to thank our guests so much. Senior Judge Elaine Andrews, my co-host and legal expert, thank you so much for being here again today. And Stacy Mars, Director of Self-Help Services, Alaska Court System. And Monica Elkinton, Private Attorney and Co-Chair of Alaska Bar Association's Unbundled Legal Services. And thanks to our listeners as well. Next week, I'll be back as your host. Our show is on loons in Alaska, and in particular, the Loon Cam at Connor's Bog. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Eric Bork is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.